Book of the Week with Claire Armistead on guardian.co.uk.
This week I'm looking at more than one book, as it's coming up to the season when you might have time to do a little more reading. Yes, it's the summer holidays again. So for this week's podcast, I've drafted in some of the Guardian's finest literary arbiters to give us their picks of what should be going with you in your luggage. In the studio with me is Sarah Crown, our online books editor, and Nicholas Lezard, Prince of the Paperbacks, in a purely Machiavellian sense, of course. Now let's go straight in with fiction, since that's what a lot of people will be wanting to read. Sarah, there have particularly been a lot of big books from women this season.
Yes, it's really been the year for female authors this year. A lot of the big authors have published, and so we have probably the four key ones that you might consider taking with you on holiday are A.S. Byatt's The Children's Book, Hilary Mantel's Wolf Hall, and Sarah Waters' The Little Stranger, and Marilyn Robinson's Home, which of course won the Orange Prize. Probably my favourite of the four was Wolf Hall, which is Hilary Mantel's reimagining of the life of Thomas Cromwell. And it's kind of rich and heavy and historical, and it does telling a really great story, but beautifully written, as it's Hilary Mantel, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it would probably fill in 2 weeks as well, because it weighs a ton, so that would be the only downside, I think.
Yes, I was really keen on the children's book, the A.S. Byatt, but I will tell you, it will take the whole of your 2 weeks to read it. A massy tome about sort of the arts and crafts movement, mothers and son relationships, sort of artists living in the Kent Weald at the beginning of the century. It's got a bit of everything in it. Nick, you were particularly keen on the Laurie Moore collected short stories.
Oh yes, they're fantastic. It's a big, chunky book. There are dozens and dozens of stories in them. And although they really only relate to the same kind of theme, which, fears about the death of children, say, or divorce, which doesn't sound very funny, some of them are, in fact, extremely funny. And they have laugh-out-loud jokes which bring to mind a whole life. I was really quite surprised at their depth. It will not necessarily be the best book to read if you are going on holiday in a crumbling marriage, but if you're also terribly secure and all that, then I can think of few better collections to take along with you.
Are you a short story fan?
I am, yes. They seem to be making a comeback. I've noticed some other good collections this year, but I would stick with the Laurie Moore, but just for sheer value for money, if nothing else.
Of course, it has been sadly been the year of the death of John Updike, which has prompted lots of musings about the great American novel. John Updike has left us with a short story collection, My Father's Tears and Other Stories. Nick, is this a good place to start?
I don't think so. I'm afraid the best thing I can do is refer you to the excellent review by Martin Amis in last week's review, and as he points out, there are quite a few bum notes, as you might say. He's sort of losing his grip, but there is so much that is so good in Updike that you can just go through any part of his oeuvre and find something that will be good, that will probably be better than this. But if you want to take the valedictorian line, then by all means have a look.
Sarah, what would you take? You're a bit of a rabbit fan, aren't you?
Yes, well, I think if you haven't read the rabbit novels and you've got a good 2 weeks summer holiday, I can think of, a few better things that you could take with you than all four and just kind of rattle them off, and there you can't put them down once you start. It's like being absorbed into somebody's family or watching a soap opera. They're just the most fantastic books.
Mm-hmm. So now, more recent fiction. What have you been keen on recently, Sarah?
A couple of things recently. I enjoyed Glendaver Gold's second novel, Sunnyside, which it's not a perfect novel. It probably tries to do too many things and has too many balls in the air. It's about the life of Charlie Chaplin, but it's also about the First World War, the British and American invasion of Russia, which I didn't even know about.
Just a few little themes then.
and pretty much everything you can think of as well thrown in. So it does. It's definitely trying to do too many things, I think, and it doesn't quite pull them all off. But it's a great introduction to early Hollywood, if you're interested in that at all. And he's brilliant on Charlie Chaplin.
And now, Nick, a book that you've been very keen on is Me, Cheetah, which also actually has been submitted for the Booker. Did you realise that?
No, I've only just found out as I look at my notes. I do wish it every success.
Tell us about it.
It purports to be the autobiography of Cheetah, who was Tarzan's chimpanzee in the... Johnny Weissmuller's chimpanzee partner in the Tarzan films. And it is scabrous, vicious, extremely funny, written with perfect tonal command, and it is also quite moving towards the end, in fact very moving. It is in fact written by a rather nice 30-something Oxbridge graduate who's been worked as a book editor, not by a chimpanzee at all. In fact, he's rather annoyed to have been outed. He rather hoped to hide behind this mask. But it looks like the start of a very good career, and is warmly recommended, and tells the most outrageous gossipy stories about the golden age of Hollywood. And if you have even the remotest interest in films, then you should take this along.
I'm very interested in this breakdown of genre categories. Another book that's been entered, I gather, for the Booker, which I would absolutely no way think of as fiction, is Ian Sinclair's Hackney, That Rose Red Empire. Are you surprised by that, Sarah?
Well, yes, I suppose so. I mean, it's as you said, it's not a book that you'd automatically think of as a novel. In fact, it's not a book that you can think of as a novel, even if you try really hard. So I'm not quite sure how they slip that under the radar.
Well, it's part of Ian Sinclair. You're a bit of a fan of Ian Sinclair, aren't you? He's a real genre buster and always has been.
Yes. I did notice that with his fiction, he has started repeating himself a bit. But with his non-fiction, he's as fresh as ever. He's also aware himself, I think, that his fiction is pretty much the same kind of thing, but in a different order. He makes references himself to this himself in the books. So, although I don't see how this is going to win a prize for fiction, why not have it in there anyway?
I think that one of the reasons for reading on holiday is to have things to discuss, isn't it, with all those people you never talk to the rest of the year. So you want to discuss where fiction ends and non-fiction begins. You could do worse than to take Ian Sinclair and me Cheetah with you. So now let's move on to some more non-fiction that you should be thinking about. Sarah, do you have any tips?
Well, of course, there's the Samuel Johnson winner, Leviathan, Philip Hawes book on the history of Wales. And he goes all over, inspired by Moby Dick, reading that when he was younger. And yes, sort of looks at Wales and their geography, where they live and how they exist. So, you know, the Samuel Johnson judges thought it was good enough. So that's maybe a good place to start with non-fiction.
That's another one that'll take you the whole 2 weeks to read. and of course, the memoir goes on and on. Do we think that it's running out of steam at all after the Julie Myerson debacle?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting question. Actually, one of the things about the Julie Myerson book is that she's done something interesting with the idea of memoir, which is mix it up with history, take it in a slightly different direction. So even though she got in a spot of bother about it, I think the way that she constructed the book was interesting and intelligent. And similarly, other books that have gone down that route this year, Margaret Drabble's and The Pattern in the Carpet, which is it's basically a memoir, but it's sort of seen through the spectrum of jigsaws. So I really enjoyed that, and that's one way, you know, of getting into memoir, I guess. But I think there's plenty of life left in memoir. You just have to think of an interesting way to approach it.
Nick, one of the things that Julie Myerson's book was about was, of course, about the problems her son had. You were particularly keen on Sandy Balfour's What I Loved About Cricket, although it's not really about cricket at all.
Yes, well, if it is and it isn't about cricket, if you don't know anything or care anything about cricket, then perhaps you might be able to give this a miss. But it is really about growing up, watching your teenage daughter grow up and have her first serious boyfriend. I found it quite interestingly creepy, in fact.
Creepy in what sense?
Well, he keeps referring to his partner as his girlfriend, but he refers to his daughter's boyfriend as the boyfriend. So you kind of get confused. You suddenly wonder who is who. And there seems to be some kind of slippage of personality going on there in a way which I really don't want to go into anymore, but you'll see what I mean if you read it.
I also very much liked Hanan al-Shaikh's The Locust and the Bird, which is about her mother in Lebanon, her mother who threw over the traces, having had a forced marriage at 13, which it seems to me, in the best way of memoir, takes you absolutely back to a Lebanon that probably no longer exists, and it's very tender. Well, let's move on to another big element of holiday reading, which is self-improvement. Sarah, tell me about some of the political books you might want to read if you want to bring yourself up to speed with current affairs.
Well, two of the books that went down really well at Hay were Vince Cable's book, The Storm, and Gillian Tett's Fool's Gold, both of which deal with the financial crisis, obviously, that we are currently in the grip of. And Vince Cable's everyone's favourite prophet of the apocalypse at the minute. And he's come out with the whole thing very well, and with the respect of his colleagues and the public generally, I think.
And of course, in Fool's Gold, what Gillian Tett does very cleverly is to take an anthropological view of why the ruling classes are allowed to get away with what they get away with. Now, Nick, you were keen on the Mark Steele, what's going on?
Yes, well, that's actually quite personal as well, because he describes himself, I think it's because there are a lot of people of a certain age now, and they're describing their own relationships breaking down. But so he ties this into the sense of political disillusionment. But he also does it with jokes, and some people don't like his jokes, but I think he's on top form with this one. There are some extremely funny lines in it, and it slips down very easily indeed. It's a light read, but with depth to it.
Well, let's move on to even more serious stuff now. Science. This is the year of Darwin. What book should one read if one wants to catch up with Darwin?
Yes, it's been all about Darwin this year, unsurprisingly, I guess. Probably two of the best serious books on the subject are Steve Jones's Darwin's Island and The Galapagos and the Garden of England. And this is about Darwin in England, Darwin at home, rather than Darwin on his travels, which we see so often, looking at what he gleaned from walking about the fields of England, which is a really nice subject for a holiday.
Well, particularly in this year when everybody's going to be taking their holidays in England.
And then the other one that's worth looking at, and again, this is a sort of a slightly different take on it, is Darwin's Sacred Cause, Race, Slavery and the Quest for Human Origins. And that's by Adrian Desmond and James Moore. And this propounds the theory that it was Darwin's family's anti-slavery feelings that kind of prompted a lot of the direction of his research. The idea that his sort of biological research had a social basis, which is one that's, you know, been kind of hanging around for a while, but seems to have gathered a bit of pace recently. But actually, for me, the one that I really enjoyed was Ruth Padell's book, which is Darwin, Life in Verse. This takes you through the whole of Darwin's life in poetry, and they're kind of patchwork poems made up from quotations from his work, from his letters and diary entries. And sort of strung together with her own words. And despite all the hoo-ha that she's been involved in this year with the Oxford Poetry Professorship, this book is great. It's available, it's interesting, and it's a good read. And so if you want to kind of get a summary of Darwin's life, I'd probably go for that.
And a reminder of what a nice man he was, which is really rather extraordinary among the great and the good, isn't it?
Well, I was in tears a couple of times reading it. You know, all this stuff that you didn't know about him, his daughter dying, this, you know, kind of his favourite child, and he and his wife getting over that, the fact that she was very religious and he really wasn't, and the way they dealt with that within their marriage and kindly with each other. I thought it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
And just lastly, Nick, one book that you liked, The Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives. I particularly wanted to mention that because I thought the title was rather appropriate to you.
What are you implying?
Tell me about that.
Well, that's just a very clever and accessible and occasionally mind-boggling but always mind-expanding book about how we do not really necessarily make the right decisions and how we can help ourselves make the right decisions. But he uses science to do this, and it's non-patronising. Treats us as the opposite of idiots, and you walk away from it not in a drunken fashion, but rather more intelligent than before you came in.
So if your take is what you like is the sort of Malcolm Gladwell or Freakonomics line, this is the book for you to pack. Now, the million-dollar question, what are you actually going to be taking on holiday, you two? Sarah?
Well, actually, because I spend all year reading some new fiction, reading for my job, I suppose, what I like to do when I go on holiday is take something completely unconnected. So, you know, a classic, something older, something that I wouldn't get to read in the normal course of the week. I was in Whitstable at the weekend and I bought a second-hand copy of Graham Greene's Essays, so I think I might take that with me.
A woman of great taste. Nick?
Well, I shall be taking whatever books I have to review during that time.
Do you mean your boss doesn't even give you a week off for your summer holidays?
No, I just love my job so much. So, but also, if when I do relax, like Sarah, I will tend to read a classic. And where I'm going on holiday, my friend has an extremely well-stocked library, so I don't even know. I just rummage along the shelves and find whatever's there. But I feel like reading, you know, a bit of Dickens, perhaps, or something like that, or When I was in Wales, I read the Mort d'Arthur, which is, I'm not showing off. It's actually really easy to read, and it's good fun, and it's all set around there anyway.
And what about you, Claire? What are you going to take?
I'm very sad to say I will be taking about 50 first books. It's the my holiday coincides with the last 2 weeks of the selection for the first book prize. But however, that is a great joy in my annual calendar.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Good luck with your packing, and remember to check your baggage restrictions, particularly with all those big books by women. Thanks to Sarah Crown and Nicholas Lezard for coming into the studio today. Until next week, goodbye.